Are you tired of spending your time and money chasing strategy after strategy, only to discover what worked 10, 5, or even 2 years ago is not working now? Things shift fast in the online space, and if you're not keeping up, you're getting left behind. It's time for something different. Welcome to the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast, where every single episode will be jam-packed with proven, profitable strategies, behind-the-scenes secrets, and what's working now resources from industry experts and global influencers to help you scale your business, shorten your learning curve, and stand out in a crowded, noisy marketplace. And now, your host, award-winning marketing and media strategist and international speaker, Patty Farmer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast. I'm your host, Patty Farmer, and I'm looking forward to sharing another industry expert with you. And today, we are going to be talking about monetizing live events, and more importantly, how to make your live event an experience. And I think that is something that is so important that we talk about. So today, we are going to have an expert talking about that. And believe me, you're going to want to have a pen and paper for sure. So let me tell you a little bit about our expert. So Dylan Schinholzer is a live event expert who has spent the last 5 years helping businesses and brands amplify their live experiences through high-level strategies and out-of-the-box thinking. From large-scale music festivals to experiential brand activations to luxury masterminds, he has done it all, and he is going to be sharing with us today. So thank you so much for being here with me, Dylan.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. Anytime I get to talk about monetizing and live events, and especially at the same time, I'm an excited little human.
I totally get that, because I know for me, anytime I get to talk about monetized strategy and leverage when I'm talking about media, that's exactly how I feel. I get all excited.
That's why I think we end up, people like us end up being good at what we do. Because at the end of the day, it's hard to be good if you're not excited about it. And there's very little things on this planet that matter to me more than just getting to do cool things with cool people. And I do that in the form of events. So I get excited about it. I get amplified when I talk about it. I get a little animated. Like when people see me, I talk about it. So yeah, I appreciate you having me today. And I'm excited to have you on our show as well. So.
No, I'm excited about that too. So let's kind of just dive in really quick. But the first thing I really do want to know is, what was your journey? Because, you know, you didn't just wake up one day and say, oh, you know what? I think I'm just going to be a live event experiential expert, right? You know,
there was a
journey along the way. So why don't you kind of share a little bit of that so we can really experience your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I did not wake up and say, I want to do events. I don't think most people do. I think a lot of us almost stumble into this world in some way or another. And that's exactly what I did years and years and years ago. My event journey, I guess, would have started when I started working at a rental business and putting up tents and things like that. And I quickly grew through that. And I liked the logistics of it. So we were putting in large scale tents and all the stuff you would need to put on an event. And I really like that industry and that side of things. I like the logistics. I like trying to figure out how to make multiple people come all at once to perform one activity. I like that kind of stuff. And then I grew up, became a little bit more entrepreneurial, started a marketing business and really took that off. I worked a lot with actually in the real estate space, working with realtors and mortgage professionals and insurance brokerages and all of that. I did super well. But then I really, really realized I did not like the client relationship anymore, to be honest. I didn't like them always hovering over me, telling me what to do, things like that. I'm just way too entrepreneurial. That's why I got out of the job world. But nonetheless, after that, I was like, well, what do I do next? I got to do something. And it hit me. I was like, wait a minute. Like, how did I just build at 22, 23, 24 years old, a pretty well established marketing company? I was like, wait, I did it through events. I did it through by going to events. I did it by volunteering at our local community festivals. I did it by being the bartender at the networking events. I did it through events. And so I realized very quickly, I was like, wait, events are super powerful. And then I met a couple other of my friends who were doing events, and they were like, yeah, hanging out with Tony Robbins. I'm hanging out with Brendan Burchard. Oh, we had to fly Tony in for our event, and I got to pick him up. I hung out with him for an hour. And that I started to realize the power of events. And then I also realized just from going to events that a lot of them were very blah. There were a lot of them were very boring. A lot of them didn't leave a lasting impression on me, not one that I would want to go home and write home about and tell my friends. So all of that together, combined with the logistics side that I was doing when I was younger, then the marketing side, and then the power of them, led me to starting Experience Events 3 years or 4 years ago now. So I've been running since. And then that has, I've done now a few hundred events for different clients, ranging from Corona to real estate communities and alike. And then obviously 2020 hit, and that was fun for all of us in this space. And so I was like, wait, got to do something. I'm too energetic to do nothing for this pandemic. So I actually called up one of my vendors. We were actually live streaming live events before the pandemic hit, and I had done a few. I had been using a platform in particular, and lo and behold, they got super busy when everyone offline had to go online. And so I called them up and I said, hey, you guys need any help? And so now a year later, I'm now the CXO at ViewStub as well. So I own Experience Events, and I'm the CXO at ViewStub, which is an event ticketing and live stream platform. So I kind of cover all bases, and I'm starting a production company later this year, buying a rental company. So my story really is just an evolution of things I've learned, started the events, and now that's all I do.
I love that. And I kind of want to talk about both of those things you're involved with, but just for the viewers and the listeners, I just really want them to understand that ViewStub is an event technology service providing industry-leading event software, ticketing, and brand activation solutions for virtual, hybrid, and in-person events. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. So ViewStub, what we did prior to the pandemic, during the pandemic, where I would say we probably pivoted a smidge to go fully virtual. And then what we will be coming out of this is always a hybrid event platform. We sell where the technology allows you to sell tickets in person, virtual, sponsorships, donations, all that good stuff. But we also have a virtual component to the platform, a video experience, if you might. Where you would then live stream in a perfect world, non-pandemic, you would be live streaming your live event. Of course, we've been all virtual for the last year, but that's the beauty of it. And that's what I like to do. And I saw it prior to joining the team. And I wasn't just tooting the horn of ViewStub because I joined the team. I was using them before because, like you said, monetizing live events, that's what I'm always looking to do for clients. That's what I'm looking to do for myself. We don't put these big old elaborate productions on to make no money. So I'm always one who understands how to make money, understands how that, you know, one revenue stream never cuts it, you know, in your own life, in your own business, in your own events. You got to have multiple. And so I do that personally. So I took that same into my events and going hybrid, as the cool kids say it, or just live streaming your live events and turning it into a pay-per-view route of your live event. Earned my clients a lot of money. And so I love that ability because it took my event beyond the venue. It allowed people who couldn't come to the event to experience it. So a lot of cool things came with that. And then now I'm just getting to have fun. Now they're just letting me, I'm coming to the point where now they're just going to let me have fun with our company and do some cool events together as well. So, but yeah.
I love it. And there's a couple things in there I really kind of want to unpack.
Sure. So
one of them I think that is really interesting is you're right. When we're talking about events, and when we're talking about experiences, I know as somebody who produces my own events, there is no greater experience to me than a two-punch, meaning that you know that you served and supported a community live that you know received value and some type of transformation when they leave, right? That they're going to implement. Right. And take action on to really help their business. And two, the experience of monetizing your own event. I mean, those two things together are just like peanut butter and jelly. Right. I mean,
they go hand in hand and people sometimes don't think they should or they could or they would. I believe like I only do events for one of two reasons, either grow a community or for a community. That's the only reason events are done on this planet. Every event on this planet is done either to grow a community or for a community. And so I'm always looking, that's the experiential side of the company, what I'm doing, the building of the relationships through live experiences and stuff. And then at the same time, it doesn't hurt anybody to make a little money off of it, whether or not that be me, whether or not that be my partners, my investors, my sponsors, my vendors. We're all there at the end of the day. We're all here on this planet to make money. So I might as well make money doing cool things like music festivals and things like that that I enjoy doing. So I just get to win all around because I love events and I love making money and I can do them together.
I love it. And, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting that I like to talk about myths and what kind of myths we can debunk, so to speak. Yeah. And one of the things that I have always found kind of fascinating and a pet peeve all at the same time is when I see people come to events or they're talking about it and they're like, well, you know, I'm going to this live event, but like, I don't care what anybody says. Like, I'm not writing a check. I'm not spending money. Like, that cracks me up because I have to tell you, what'd you go for? Because when I go to events and I attend, well, I attend lots of virtual ones, but as an international speaker, I attend a lot of events. But I have to tell you, for me, every time I walk in the door and attend an event, whether I'm speaking, I'm still always going to be at the whole event, even though I may be speaking for an hour, right? The event's taking days. My vision is that I'm hoping when I'm sitting in that seat, that when I got there, that the one person that I needed to sell or share, whatever the case may be, something that I know can move the needle in my business makes the whole reason why I'm there. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I don't sit there with my arms crossed and think, oh, I don't care what you say. You know, you're gonna have to prove it to me, baby. You know, for me, it's kind of like, please let me come to this event and somebody's going to show up. And from that stage, they're going to share something with me that I'm going to be like, man, that was the game changer. Sometimes you have to pay for that. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes it could happen in the hallway, having a conversation with somebody, yeah. Right? It could happen somewhere, but we go to events to build community, to extend the knowledge we have, to amplify our message. There's a lot of reasons why people go to events, but I have to tell you, I don't understand why anybody goes to a live event and their mindset when they walk in the doors, I don't care what you say to me, I'm not spending a dime. Because if that's the case, why don't you just stay home and do us all a favor, right? Because that's just not the mindset that you should have. And it's not a CEO mindset for sure. So I always like to say, when I'm talking to anybody about events, anything that we can do to shift that mindset for them and help them to realize that, yes, you're there to network, of course. Right. But wouldn't you like to learn something that when you go home, maybe you're not standing on that stage making money, but maybe you're going to go home and implement something that somebody else shared with you that you are going to make money. So that's the name of the game for me, really. There's just, it doesn't matter where you sit or stand at a live event, whether you're the producer in the back, an attendee in the seat, a speaker from the stage, everybody has the ability to make money at an event if you have your mindset right. Would you agree?
Oh, I mean, I think that goes for everything and anything. Events all around, to make a fine point, is, you know, when I talk of monetizing live events, I'm obviously thinking of it from my side of things, organizer, host, brand, whatever it looks like. But you're 100% right. Some of these are tickets, you know, we both know can range very high to even enter the room. And I've seen it all the time. I have clients who put on $10,000 events, and there's always one or two people in the room who are like just chilling, hanging back, closed-minded to everything. I'm like, why did you come? Like, what are you here for? Because like you said, there's moments and why you would go to an event and why I, you know, everyone right here, and this might transition a couple things, but like why everyone is saying, you know, the future's virtual, future's hybrid, you know, all of that. You'll never recreate and replace the in-person event for some of the things you just said. The impact is different from the feeling and emotional aspect, but also the serendipity that happens by meeting that random human in the outside or at the bar, right? I've rolled up at events and just rolled up to the bar in the hotel, and you realize, like, you just started chatting with the guy next to you, and you realize it's the CEO of some major corporation. I'm like, did that just like hit gold? Scott, I was trying to, like, there's serendipity that just cannot happen virtually. But yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. The more open-minded in general, that's my biggest thing, is those people are on stage for a reason. I'm not. So regardless, they're doing something better. Even if I don't think they are, I think if I'm, you know, that guy, they're doing something better. I'm there to listen. I'm there to be open. I'm there to receptive. But at the end of the day, I always joke with people, I'm a terrible attendee. I can never attend events anymore the same, because instead of like getting to interact and enjoy, I'm sitting there breaking down everything. And be like, man, I would have used a different trust system. That stage design's kind of weak. But full transparency, I haven't really attended events in a little while.
I think that is so funny.
I'm a terrible attendee.
I have to tell you, I don't know if I'd say I'm a terrible attendee, but I will say that I definitely attend now through a different lens. And myself, I have to put myself in check sometimes when I am watching speakers, because you always want to learn what they do. And I'll be looking at them like, oh, I love the way they seeded that offer. And oh, the pricing strategy they did for that was really, really good. But then also you're looking at it and go, oh man, why did they do that? Oh, the way they did that offer, they should have done that later on in the event. I do that too. So I totally get it. It's kind of like probably hairdressers that they look at other people's hair and they're like, oh man, they shouldn't have had bangs, you know, or whatever
exactly
the case may be. So I'm sure that's kind of like absolutely what does happen. So I do think it is funny. Before we actually really dive in, we've been talking a little bit here about virtual, hybrid, and in-person. So for the listeners out there who really don't know what a hybrid model is, can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, the hybrid model is pretty simple. We've all, you know, it's being almost coined as a new phrase, but at the end of the day, it's not new. So really a hybrid event is really just it's one event with two different ways to experience it. It's in one event that has an in-person interactive live crowd in the venue, in the stadium, at the venue. And then you have an online digital virtual crowd, whatever you want to do. You're broadcasting it out, right? And so people who are trying to claim it's new or anything like that have just never watched the Super Bowl or the Grammys or the CMA Awards, any major event on this planet, the Olympics, the world's largest hybrid event. They have an in-person element. You know, there's when you watch the Olympics online, there's people in the crowd. But I'm at home watching it, broadcasting it, because two reasons. Every single event on this planet loses ticket revenue because people can't come. Dog sitter, babysitter, work, can't afford your $10,000 ticket plus hotel, conference, like all of that. So there's reasons people can't come, and you shouldn't isolate those folks. That's mean of you. And then the second of it is, no matter how big your event is and no matter how big the venue is, there's something that we call four walls, and those restrict how many people you can actually talk to at once. Even if you're outdoors, there's a fence somewhere that restricts how many people you can talk to, which I think if you're one of those folks who come to me and go, my event's super impactful, I change lives, I'm transformational, well, then I'm going to look at you and go, if you're not live streaming your events, then you're doing the world a disservice. If you're that ingrained that your stuff is that good, well, then you not broadcasting and doing a hybrid model before, now, and after the pandemic is literally a disservice to the people that you want to help, because you are limiting how many people you can talk to at once. I can talk to 100 in front of me. We can change lives. You can do all that serendipity. You can get their emotions. There's a lot of impact made there. But then I can broadcast it out to unlimited globally. And then all of a sudden, a lot of that, you know, the reasons of why I'm going hybrid, there's a handful of them, between money, between reach, between impact, between FOMO, all of those come together, and you're now producing something that seems much bigger than it is. So a hybrid event is pretty simple, a combination of in-person and virtual. Whatever that looks like virtually is up to you.
And would you say that really, even though the hybrid model has been around and it's just another name, right? Mm-hmm. Would you say that that model is our way of transitioning back to live events? I mean, I think that actually now that we know, we should be doing both forever now, because now we know that we actually can do both. But do you think it is kind of, let's talk about the transition back. I know that I'm super excited that so far this year, 2021, I am booked for three live events, and I'm super excited about that. I can't wait till I can get out of the country and be doing those. But let's talk about that transition. What would you say is really the transition that we're going through right now to get back to it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think inevitably the transition, you know, the transition or the new future will inevitably always be live events. Depending, we could break down event types and customers and segments, B2B, B2C, like, you know, there's a difference between association event going hybrid and virtual, where they could save a lot of money. And oftentimes those events aren't that experiential driven. People don't really look forward to going to that association event. But they do look forward to going to Coachella or a music festival. So there are other plays where, you know, the future for someone looks more in person than it does virtual. And there's industries that are more virtual with a smaller in-person environment. But I think the full transition, to be honest, what the pandemic did was brought awareness to this model, but also the tech had time to catch up, because before the technology didn't, it was either very robust and costly, or the companies that were doing it, like the mega giants in the pay-per-view business, they made you have multi-million-dollar marketing budgets and production budgets, and they took 80% of your money. So now you're seeing platforms make it a little easier. So I think that's why the transition is going to be easier, and you'll see a lot of events adopt this model for the foreseeable future, because we're still limited. Like, at the end of the day, there's some states, you know, not all my clients are doing events in Texas and Florida where things are wide open. So they have limits, you know. A buddy of mine's doing an event in New York, 150 people, that's all you can have. And that's just recent, right? So he's used to selling out crowds of 1,000 to 2,000. Well, now we're going to do 150, keep it super small, super intimate, and then broadcast it out. So I think for the foreseeable future, and what I'm hoping and what I hope comes out of this is what I'm trying to coin and figure out how to do on my own, and what I want to do the festival world and the conference world, is a craft event. So what craft beer did to alcohol, I want to do two big events. So taking the big festival energy and environment and compacting it down to a really small one and making it a really intimate environment that is just that more experiential, that more impactful for my attendees. Same thing with conferences, right? These 20, 30,000 person conferences are great. You know, you get around 30,000 people all screaming the same things, if you feel much more powerful. But we both know that those intimate events are much more powerful. The serendipity is much more likely to happen. So I think that's going to be the foreseeable future, but the mega events will come back. But I think hybrid will be adopted for folks who can understand it. I think associations and product launches and stuff can now become virtual. The technology's there, so we'll see that. And at the end of the day, business and brands need to be doing both. In person, when you're leveraging events as your marketing tactic, which is what I do, experiential marketing at the end of the day is probably the wheelhouse I fall in under now. Using live events, you need to be doing campaigns and strategies offline and online. So now virtual and hybrid are kind of just more accepted. Technology's there. So brands and businesses can now leverage both. And I think that's what the future is going to be. And brands figuring out that it's not just about that one event. It's about how can you start curating the community. And I think that's going to become bigger than ever. Is the events are going to be vehicles for the community, and that's where the brands will start to focus a little bit more. How can we create communities live beyond the event, and just not just that one-off event? That's just one vehicle, but I think it's going to be more of a bigger and deeper integration between offline and online communities, and providing experiences for both.
That's one person's take. No, I really. Really do. I know that as a speaker, I've spoken in front of thousands and thousands. There is something about that connectiveness when you're just with like 50, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
changes.
You know, it just really honestly is. And I have always loved that. You know, that is what I've always considered my sweet spot, so to speak. So I think that is very, very important. One of the things that a conversation you and I had before we were on the podcast that really excited me was this technology now that we have about this whole ticketing and about everything that we can do on our website, right? I mean, that is such a mind blower that I don't think I have still grasped the capacity for what you can do with that, right? You know, yeah. I mean, not having to, you know, do things. I have to say there's nothing wrong, and there's a lot of positives for using Eventbrite, right? And other, sure. You know, ones like that. But the ability to drive those people and do it on your own website is like, bam. I mean, that is like the all that and everything,
that's right? The holy grail of event softwares.
Isn't it though? I mean, it is just like amazing. So let's just kind of start diving into that, because the reality is having those type of things and being able to add this experiential element, which I do feel more now than everything, since we're not stuck at home, we're safe at home, right? You know, but since we are, and we're not all getting out there in those live events, it's even more important for people to experience, because we're craving that, right? We're missing that in our life right now. So let's kind of talk about, I mean, I want to make sure we get to the marketing and the monetizing events, but let's talk a little bit about really, because this is really your genius, is let's talk about experience. Let's really talk about what, you know, how you can really monetize live experiences, right? Because that's really where it's at. And, you know, how you can turn your events into experiences. And while you're doing that, you can also turn up the profit.
That's right. They go hand in hand. So I've often, and this is something that I've started really preaching, I've always something believed in, but gotten more vocal about it. Events are things you go through, or events are things that happen, but literally by definition, they're things that happen. Experiences are things you go through, right? So if I break down what I'm trying to do in a 3-day a conference, I don't want it to be just something that happens, right? Me walking my dog this morning was something that happened. That's an event by definition. So now, when I start calling it and referring it to it and thinking about it as an event, putting it in the same category as me walking my dog. So that's real exciting, right? So what inevitably, I want to create an experience that someone goes through. And the reason for that is, at the end of the day, I'm trying to bridge the gap between business or brand or host, whoever that is over here, and the customer, right? I want to bridge the gap. I use live events to do that. And so the deeper the experience you can give someone, the more memorable it becomes, because we remember the things we experience. Like we forget more than we remember on this planet, because we so much happens. We every single day, thousands of things happen to us. We forget 99.9% of them. I want to create something, and I only have a 3-day window most of the time to create something so impactful, so experiential that you remember it forever. That you want to leave it and go tell your friends about it. You want to leave it and come back next year. You're at it and you want to share it on social media so that you can get it, because it's been for so much value to you. And people at the end of the day value experiences, regardless. If anyone has noticed, events run this world. I don't care what anybody says. The whole world's mental health dropped when we can't do events anymore. When you can't go to your birthday party or your Christmas party or your music festival, mental health drops. So people value the experience. And so if I'm trying to bridge the gap between a brand and a customer, and I'm trying to using live events as the vehicle, that event needs to be so different and so memorable and so impactful that it takes that customer through a better journey and then comes out on the other end going, I'm coming back next year. I'm buying this person's product. I'm telling my friends. I'm posting on social. I'm become like a brand ambassador for them, because you built that relationship. And how you did it was exchanging cool live experiences with them, because that's what people value. It's one of our most valued things that people don't think about, is providing something cool for them to do. We live off entertainment. We live off education. So a brand who can leverage that in turn builds a deeper relationship. So most people, when you say monetizing the experience, like, you know, most people think, I only think in ticket revenue or sponsorships and things like that. Monetizing for me, if I can build better customer journeys through live experiences, that monetization extends long beyond that little event that I just did. And that's what I'm looking to do. It's great to make the money off the event. It's great to have great ticket sales, sponsorships, vendor booths that are paying me, affiliate sales, merchandise, swag, food, all of that stuff that I, you know, all my revenue streams going hybrid, pay-per-view, I have about 11. The biggest one for me, and the one that's most impactful, and the one that I actually drive my ROI off of, is that person coming back. Is that person telling their friends, how much money can I make? Like, we're getting very granular. How much money can I turn this one person into? It's not just, can they like my event? They paid tickets and I ended up making like $400 off of them. I want them to come back. I want them to buy more of my product, whatever it is, whether it's a beer brand, whether it's a soda brand, whether it's a coach. I want them to continue to be involved in my community, to buy products, to tell their friends. And that's what I'm looking at ROI. Obviously the event has its ROI, but I'm looking at the lifetime value of a customer, and I know I can up that by providing cool, memorable, impactful experiences that transform all the things that events do that may both me and you know while you're at it, transform you, help you, you know, educate you, entertain you. But I want to also use that as a tool to just continue to develop relationships. And if I can build relationships, that's the whole world.
It is. You know, I'm thinking about this experiential event that I actually spoke at, but he did this super interesting thing. He was talking about joint ventures and collaboration and things we can do together. And he was saying how really he was always looking at how can we build relationships in a way that we would want to play in the JV sandbox together. So what was super fun is we didn't know it on the first day, but on the second day, which I spoke on the first day, and he didn't even tell the speakers. This was like a total surprise because he wanted us to be surprised too. But on the second day, when we came in, at the back of the room, he had all these sandboxes, like real live sandboxes that he had. And at our table, we had all these buckets and stuff. And he had us go through these like exercises. And then we took our bucket, we went over to the sandbox, and we had all these different things. And he had us sharing with each other. It was the coolest, funnest thing, because who doesn't like to play, right? You know, so I mean, we really got in that sandbox and we were, you know, making. I remember one time we got together and he was like having us partner up with people that we thought were good collaboration partners. And we literally built like this castle together. Like we're all packing sand and doing all this stuff. And I have to tell you, the energy in the room was changed. Like it was so dynamic and fun. And I have to say that I thought of the people that I was with differently, because when we were all working on building that sandcastle, everybody had a different perspective. Everybody had a different thing. And when we were sharing ideas, it helped you to see how they think. And it was like, wow, I like the way they think about that. We should talk about this project that I'm thinking about working on. So I have to tell you, experiences can bring people together in a way that changes the conversation and the whole dynamic and makes a shift that all the talking at you could never do.
Exactly. And it sounds like with that example, and what I always preach is obviously the experience is only as good as the alignment it has with the objective and the why of the event. It sounds like he was like, hey, this event is about joint ventures. It's about connecting humans together who could possibly JV and things like that. So I'm going to go build an event that is aligned with that, that actually tries to achieve that goal through something experiential, because he could talk about it. He could talk about it all day. But like what you just said, and you're driving home my point of he created something that was different. You're not doing that at other events. You're not playing with sandcastles at other events. That's cool stuff, right? So now you're now also talking about it. You remember it. You've just told me about that person. And this is, how long ago was that event?
About 3 years ago.
3 years ago, we're still talking about that event because he knew what his objective was. And then he thought outside of the box. Well, in this case, he kind of thought in the box, sandbox. But that was terrible. Anyways,
that was good.
but he took it as objective, because that's where it starts. When people think experience, it's like, oh, can I just do random things over here that people will entertain? Sure, but it has to have alignment with the why. And I always start with the why plus who equals the what, when, and where. And so that's my formula for experience. But nonetheless, you're 100% right. He took an experiential element, made it an activity, a fun activity that aligned with his objective, which was connecting humans to potentially JV and let everybody see each other. And then outcome of that is us talking about it 3 years later on a podcast.
You know, it's really funny too, because there are two people from that event who have literally told me we're so connected. We've done multiple things together that have said, you know what, the best thing that happened at that event, this one, I'm not saying whose event it was. They said, Patty, you know what, the best thing that happened out of that event was meeting you. Like what we have done together, right? And I don't know, we might never have done those things together if we weren't building that sandbox together. So I love it. Yeah. The other thing that you said that I really kind of want to unpack is where you were talking about different revenue streams that an event actually has. And you touched on a few of them. I know that the listeners are probably frothing at the bit right now. Like, wait, Patty, please make sure you ask him that to go back to that, because I know that's important to them. So let's kind of talk about what some of the ways that, if you really think of it through the experience, what are some of the revenue streams? I mean, we all have revenue streams that we know that just a live event can do. But let's talk about how, by upping the game and having it be more experiential, like what we just said, 3 years, we're still talking about it. Do you want people to be talking about your event 3 years from now? Right. What are some of the ways that they can monetize not just a live event, but monetize a live event experience? What are some of those revenue streams?
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, adding in the experience factor, as I call it, and really deploying that against every decision you make in your event design and planning and coordination and all of that. I don't know if it actually creates new revenue streams, but what it does is amplify the 11 to 15 that most events use, or that events should be or could be using. So, I mean, that starts as very simple ones that we all know, like ticketing and upfront charging and things like that, to sponsorships and partnerships. Those are your two biggest ones. And there's obviously, we can talk all day about the depth of each one of these verticals, but I'm going to keep it high level because I can ramble and we don't have that time. But you know, you have your tickets and your sponsorships, your vendors or exhibitors. And these apply to all different types of events. Some of them go together, some of them don't. But exhibitors or vendors at your event, those people pay you to be there. And then you have, you know, products, upsells, exclusive experiences that you're bringing those people together to then upsell and pitch. Do that creatively. It's a huge revenue stream. There's merchandise. There's merchandise and swag. There's albums. All the products that you could sell that aren't digital or coaching products or upsells, they're just there. Merchandise. There's the food. Like I throw all sorts of events, so I oftentimes don't talk in just the form of conferences, but food and beverage. You know, I make a lot of money off beer at events. It's probably one of my bigger ones, right? So using food and beer, using donations, using affiliate sales. This is the one a lot of people don't think about, is I leverage everyone that's at my event selling something, food and beer, other speakers speaking. They're selling their product. If you come on one of my stages and you have a product, Patty, and it's $5,000, well, guess what? I gave you the vehicle to talk and sell that and promote it out to my audience. So in turn, all it's going to be is a 10% kickback, 15%, whatever deal you make with that person. So me, as the event organizer, just collected 10 more revenue streams off my 10 speakers who sold at my conference. And I didn't do anything. I've already invited them. So there's that. There's donations. There's more advanced ones that are coming out. I want, like, this whole NFT craze is super interesting to me. With all of the digital collectibles and things like that, some of my bigger events and these music festivals can leverage some of this digital monetization streams that I don't think some people are ready for yet. But what I'm going with that is experience doesn't add a revenue stream. There's also going hybrid or pay-per-viewing your event. But experience, what that's going to do is amplify everyone. It's going to make everyone easier to convert. Right. If you're trying to sell tickets, everyone's like, well, how do I sell more tickets? Like, how do I get more people to buy my tickets to an event? Very simple. The answer is very simple. You give them an event that they want to go to. It's not that hard. I'm not the king of creation here. I have no idea what's going to make people buy tickets. My answer is just give them what they want. And you do that by asking them, but you give them what they want. And then that's how you sell more tickets. You want a higher conversion rate? It's not email campaigns and copy and Facebook ads and funnels. It's make the event something they actually want to buy. Sponsorships, making an event that's actually one that they want to sponsor. So the experience side of it, and the cooler things that everyone can get involved in, if you're trying to convert, the more experiential you can give them, more open-minded you created them, then guess what? When you go to upsell and to do all that, they're more likely to convert because they're having a good time. They're talking. They're not thinking about their wallet. They're not thinking about their $5,000 check they just stroked. They're worried about what they're going to do next at the after party. So like the experience level doesn't add revenue streams. It amplifies the current ones. So that's why I always tell people, if you know, experience might cost a little more, but you're leaving a lot of money on the table by not doing it. You're boring, bland, dull hotel conference event that has no lighting, no production, no stage design, no creative event flows to make people go through a journey, things like that. You know, they're just going to walk in, blah, right? They're going to go sit down, blah. And then, so you try to sell them, they're still blah. So the experience factor, and I can give them that experience and that edutainment aspect of it, amplifies.
I love that. So now I have like a two-part question. So the two-part question is this. I mean, you come from marketing as well. So what I want to know is, what would you say, let's just say three. What would you say are the three biggest mistakes you see people make here? And then let's kind of talk about what are some marketing tips that you can give for that. But let's always start with the myths that people believe, the mistakes that they make, because it's always important to know what not to do, just as it is to know what to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've thought a lot about this in especially the last year, but in general, events and marketing, it's all of it to me, in my opinion. Number one, don't underestimate the process. Event creation, marketing, all of that, it's going to take a lot of thought. It's going to take a lot of coordination. It's going to take a lot of planning, and it's going to take a lot of intentionality to pull off whatever you're trying to pull off. Marketing campaigns, live events, they all take effort. And I think a lot of people, especially here lately in this virtual world, think that they can just turn on webcams and they're off and running. That's their virtual event. They're not putting any thought into what's behind them. They're not putting any thought into what the attendees seeing, how they buy tickets, when they buy tickets, how they get into the room, the experience, the engagement, the gamification, the after event. They're not thinking about any of that. So the underestimation of what it takes to put on good marketing, good events, good anything. And then the biggest one I often joke about is not only they underestimate it, then they go, in fact, overcomplicate it. Everything on this planet is simple. We're not reinventing the wheel when we talk about events or marketing or anything. No one's talking anything new. Just keep it simple. Do what works. Okay. Keep it simple, right? People oftentimes, you need 82 pieces of content to go online to market your event. You need a couple. You need like a cool little video, some flyers, right? And you just keep it simple because it's easier to manage, but you can also master simple, right? I'd rather see, you know, one greatly done piece of content that promotes your event or promotes your business, promotes your van that you put money into instead of 50 little not so good examples that you didn't invest in. So the overcomplication of things is just, you know, in events, they have to have all of these different multi-layered things that think that they add value. There's like 82 breakout rooms and like there's 14 speakers going on at once and all of that. And at the end of the day, attendees they're not trying to be at your event thinking about the 42 different things going on or your marketing, or they have to think about what you're trying to convey in your messaging. So everybody overcomplicates things. Break it down, keep it simple. And if you're not talking to a two-year-old, then you're probably doing it wrong. Like genius comes from taking very complex things like event design and marketing, you know, content creation, and making them very simple. That's genius. That's genius. So one, it's underestimating it, overcomplicating it. And then the third one is just literally not taking it seriously enough. I think people think that events, they just put them on and people are going to sell tickets. That's not how that works. You got to have hype. You got to have anticipation. You got to have buildup. You got to have marketing. You got to have excitement. You got to have energy. And so, especially for the last year, but even before that, they don't take it serious enough. They're not hype men of their own event. So, I mean, that would be the biggest thing. Like the myth says that, oh, I'm doing an event, people are going to buy tickets. No, you have to sell. You have to have proper messaging around your marketing to tell them why they're going to come. You have to educate them why they're going to come. And you have to be excited and energetic while you do it.
I love that. That is so good. I mean, literally, that was so great. Let's talk about how if maybe you haven't done an event, you're thinking about doing an event, or maybe you have done one or two and they just really weren't what you wanted them to be. Like, what are some things that they can change up? Well, first of all, they can make it be more experiential, but let's kind of give them really actionable things that they can take away that I hope they're going to be writing down and say, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. Let's kind of talk about that.
Yeah. So when you go to do anything on this planet, my genius is that I know I'm not one. I never claim to be. I don't play one on TV, nothing. So my genius when I go to create events for anyone, everyone, is always like, they're like, well, how do you know what they want? Very simple. Step one of everything is just ask them. Like, don't try to keep it simple. Don't try to recreate the wheel. Don't think that you're event almighty and know everything that everybody wants. I literally, from step one all the way, like months out before an event, all the way to after the event, I'm constantly asking questions. So if you don't know where to start or what to give your attendees or your community, literally just ask them, hey, what do you guys want? What kind of speakers you want? What kind of entertainer? Hey, I'm putting on a country event. What's your favorite artist? What artists do you guys want to see? Who would make you want to come? I'm going to get a list. People love to give their opinion. Allow them the vehicle and they'll do it. And then what you do is take that data and then put your little creative spin on it, and out comes an event literally made by them for them. You can't lose. You can't lose. So number one, like what to do is just flat out ask the people you want to attend. Or if you can't ask them because you don't have that community yet, go into those communities. They're there. People have already done the work for you. there are other communities that you could go in and hack and learn that data of what they're asking for, what they're asking their influencer for, whatever it is. Like, you can read the room, so to speak, and get the same data. But it comes down to, can you analyze the data, ask for it, receive it, and then implement it into your event in a creative way? Because most attendees don't know what they want in experiential, but they know what they want. They know they want, hey, I want this speaker. I've been looking to you know, connect with this speaker. Great. You know, now you know who to get as a keynote. It's not that hard. It's not like you have to then go out and guess. So number one is just flat out ask them. That's my biggest thing to everything. And then you ask them and give them what they need. So it really is those two things. If you're trying to, you know, actionable, create an event, you figure out what they want, you figure out their needs, and then you just kind of do it. And then, so that's a big one, asking everybody what to do. And then I think it comes down to, outside of that though, is literally understanding that the experience and the event is just a vehicle for you. And so doing that and doing them creatively and online and offline will always win. And I think what you said, you made a fine point. It's really the to-dos are really the opposite of the to-don'ts. So keep it simple. You know, the folks overcomplicating it, keep it simple. It doesn't have to be crazy elaborate. What you have to do though is master the simple. If, you know, experiences can be hurt and events can be hurt by you just not understanding how to get people in, checked in an efficient manner. Like, if they have to stand in a line, it's little things. It's not always like elaborate $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 productions. It's literally something as simple as, you know, thinking about the details. How does someone check in? Where does someone go to the bathroom? Where do they, how do they know where to be and when? And just understanding some of that, and you'll win in this world. And then it just comes down to being a voice of your own. I think a lot of people don't talk enough about themselves and talk about the event and being their own hype person for the event. You got to get hype about these things, because events are hard to sell. It's a very saturated market. Thousands, tens of thousands, millions of events on this planet of all shapes and sizes. Your job is to be different. So if you're looking to do, it's look at everybody else and kind of do the opposite, because you have no way to stand out if you're doing what everybody else is doing. The whole industry, I have a joke, the whole industry as a whole, it goes through this whole insanity cycle of doing the same thing but expecting different results. So all event organizers are like, I'm going to do this. Hotel, like, I saw one person over here do it, I'm going to do it because I think it'll work. And then everyone starts to do it. And then all of a sudden, we're all still doing, let's say, hotel conference rooms in the coaching space, right? I've seen this a lot. And especially in that space, they're renting out hotel rooms, no production, no lighting, no design, bad check-in process. And then all these coaches are doing it, but they're all expecting to create communities, be experiential, keep selling, all that. Literally the definition of insanity. So
you said like three things here that just like, I had to like mute myself for a second so I can have a belly laugh. But the thing that you said that just super made me laugh is when you said, you need to be able to talk about yourself. Most people don't talk about themselves. I just laugh because like in my world, they just can't shut up and stop talking about themselves, right? It's, that's, you know, true. They feel like sometimes they're all like me, me, me. And I always want to be able to say the thing that you need to understand is it's not about you, right? When even when people hire you, you know, when you're talking about, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a this, I'm a that. I always want to say, you know, yes, those things do give you credibility, but they're not hiring you for that. What they're hiring you for is what are the results you can get me. So I just kind of thought that, I mean, in the context that you used, it was, you know, perfect, but it was just kind of funny when, when you said that, you laughed. But the other thing that you said that I have to tell you is probably the biggest takeaway, the listeners, if they didn't get anything else out of all of the golden nuggets that you shared, I really wanted to point this out and spotlight this. So if they didn't get this, I want to make sure that they do, is where you said, if you don't have a community yet, there are hundreds of communities out there. You can get that data by going into somebody else's community. Make sure you do it correctly. But you can do it. So it's not like that can't be your excuse. So let's take that excuse away, because there are people out there that really need you. I always like to say, like, you're not trying to reinvent ice cream. You're just creating your own flavor, you know, and some people adamantly hate vanilla, but love strawberry, right? So just be your flavor. And the people who love that flavor will come. So that was truly genius, I do have to tell you. Just putting that there is like, I don't think people really understand. It is about getting data, and people do things emotionally. They make emotional decisions. They just back up writing the check with data. So as long as you can really, like you said, tell, you know, give them what they want and sell them what they need, it really, it works. It works really hard. So I just think that was a super huge point that I wanted to make sure that if they missed it while they were writing, that they had a second to come back to that. Cause man, that was like the golden ticket right there.
I mean, cause like I said, your events are only being done one of two reasons: to grow a community or for one. So people, when they're coming to event design and they're at stop one, they have to figure out, do they have that community? Are they doing it for a particular community? Or are they looking to grow it? If they're looking to grow it and they don't have it, they have to go where those communities already are. They're not special. Sorry, coaches. Sorry, people. You're not special. There are other people out there exactly like you that are doing events at all scales. What I do is just go look. Like, I'm not saying copy by any means. I'm saying go look at inspiration. Go look at the ones that are winning, the communities that are winning, and see the data. Like, see the folks that are talking, hey, I love this about, you know, this conference. It was amazing. And then go, well, I could do that. I could apply something like that to my event. Oh, people like to, you know, people like this speaker. They like these kind of breakout rooms, or they like these sessions, or they like this band, apparently. Like, maybe I could have that band and some of these people in this other person's community would come to my event, right? So if you start to look at some of that, you can start hacking different communities, and you're reverse engineering the cultures of other people's communities, which in turn then allows you to create the culture and develop your community. And over time, they will all coexist.
Well, you know, that's kind of the model of, well, if you like this, well, you'd like that, right? You know, I mean, that's kind of really what that is. And I love it. So, Dylan, I have to tell you, this has been phenomenal. And I love that you were really willing to be so generous with your knowledge, your genius. So how could people connect with you? Because I absolutely know they're going to want to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so me personally is Dylan Schinholzer on all social medias. Made it simple. My name's hard enough to spell. I didn't need to make it any more complicated. So just at Dylan Schinholzer on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. I'm on all of those all the time. I put more of my professional content on LinkedIn. I get to play around on Instagram and Facebook. So, and then outside of that, Experience Events is on all platforms, as well as ViewStub. So ViewStub. Also, my show of at Event Masters show, which Patty will be on here in a few weeks. But that's really what I'm doing. You know, you can find any one of those or all four of those online. Dylan Schinholzer, Experience Events, ViewStub, Event Masters show. You can find me at any one of those places. I'm always there. And that's all I do.
And we will have those all in the show notes with nice, easy links for you so that you can find it nice and easy. So here's the part of the show where I like to call, it's my version of social karaoke. It's our open mic portion of the show where we ask our guest to share. I mean, he gave so much knowledge, but what would be your number one marketing, media, or money strategy?
Pretty simple. It's just it's more of a granular than everything I've talked about. It's always be building relationships, become a master of people. Become a master of building relationships. Everything we do on this planet is a relationship. Marketing is trying to create that cold relationship with someone new, online, offline. Money's out there if you have the right relationships. If you're trying to make more money, right people will make you the right money. So that's easy. Same thing with media. You want to get published, you want to be in the media, you want to get press, it's all people. There's people controlling that. None of this is done by robots. So if you can be a master of relationships, the three things this show is about come to you. You don't have to find them. Yeah, I don't have to go out and hunt money. I don't go hunt money. I don't go hunt sales. I don't go hunt deals, unless we're talking real estate. Then we're on a hunt for deals. But nonetheless, outside of that, I'm on a hunt for people. I'm on a hunt for relationships. I'm on the hunt for people who I could provide value to. And in turn, they have usually the dirty side of that is they have what I need or want. But either way, I just like people. I have a mantra. I throw cool events with cool people. All I care about, just cool people hanging out. I'm a lifestyle guy. At the end of the day, I like the hustle. I like working. I like startup culture and things like that. At the end of the day, I just want to go on vacations with uber rich people, hang out with them, do cool things. Everything is about relationships.
I love that. It's actually really my motto as well, which basically is that relationships are the currency in today's business environment. Mm-hmm. The question I always want to ask somebody is, if that's true, how fat is your wallet? Right? You know, because that's really what it comes down to. So thank you so much for being here with us today, Dylan. I appreciate it so much. I appreciate your generosity in sharing that brilliance. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I'm excited to have reciprocate this and talk to you in a couple of weeks.
I'm excited too. And we want to thank our sponsor, the Exacta Corporation, developer of the Family Organizer Plus platform. For more information, check them out at exactacorp.com. Thank you for joining us today, everyone, on the Marketing Media and Money podcast. And if you enjoyed today's episode, and I'm sure you did, please subscribe and review the podcast on your favorite listening platform. Until next week, everyone, make it a phenomenal day.
Thank you for joining us today on the Marketing, Media, and Money podcast. To shorten your learning curve even more, make sure to grab your free copy of the Marketing, Media, and Money magazine at www.marketingmediamoney.com. I promise your business will thank you.